and Chandler on Friends, and I could confirm that two of them did indeed enjoy pizza. For those men we met who said that they were too busy with work at the moment, GoCon seemed like the most comfortable option for them to explore meeting women. But this presents challenges for men who don't have any female friends to organize a GoCon with. A newer trend for meeting people is MachiCon. In MachiCon, men and women pay to participate in a huge roving party filled with hundreds and hundreds of singles who wander through a neighborhood's bars and restaurants. At some MachiCon, most people go solo. At others, partygoers begin the evening by sharing a meal with the one or two friends who come with them, as well as with a few strangers of the opposite sex. After that, the organizers move people around, musical chair style, and the participants wind up mingling with lots of other singles. What's amazing about these events is that both the private sector and the Japanese government are now subsidizing the establishments that host them. According to Kumiko Endo, the sociologist who showed us around Tokyo and studies MachiCon for her dissertation, bar and restaurant owners get $25 to $35 per seat that they give to the parties. In all the research I've done on dating, I haven't heard of another place where the state is throwing money into the single scene, effectively buying a few drinks for every young person willing to go on the prowl. Thus far, the public investment in these events is modest, but it's a signal of how seriously the government views the marriage drought and of how much it will take to reinvigorate the matchmaking market. The relationship replacement industry. Eggs, prostitutes, and soap land. For a lot of the herbivore-esque guys we spoke to, it still seems like it would take quite a lot to overcome the hurdle of shyness to properly engage in these group dating activities. There were also women who weren't willing to settle for the restrictions that come with traditional marriages and families. Like women in the United States and Europe, and an ever-growing number of other places, they want to have rewarding work lives and careers too. The problem in Tokyo is that people who aren't interested in or capable of entering a traditional romantic relationship don't have the alternative of an active casual dating culture like you may find in New York. Lucky for them, Japan has not only a huge sex industry, but also what some have dubbed a relationship replacement industry that provides everything from cuddling cafes, where clients pay for things like pats on the head, eye contact, and ear cleaning with the Q-tip, to full-on sex robots that are built to last for years. I never thought I would say this, but of those two things, having sex with a robot seems like the more reasonable option. The most popular kind of establishment in the relationship replacement industry is the hostess club, which is basically the latest variation of a long-standing Japanese business tradition where men go to a nice bar-type atmosphere and pay women to provide intimate personal service in a romantic but not explicitly sexual way. The women are like modern-day geishas. They light the men's cigarettes, serve them drinks, and listen attentively to their conversation, doing more or less what an ideal Japanese wife or girlfriend would do. Lots of men stop by these clubs after work, either alone or in groups. To be clear, though, this doesn't lead to any sexual contact. No nudity or sex happens at the hostess clubs. It's basically like prostitution, but they just hang out with you. I was very confused. Al, a young expat originally from Baltimore, tried to explain the motivations. "It's like, I'm lonely, I'm scared of people," he said. "I need to vent or just have a drink with someone who will listen to me and not judge me. They're paying for the security. They're paying not to be rejected." Women also go to host clubs, which provide the same service. Outgoing men who converse and have drinks with them. Again, this does not lead to sex. It's purely for companionship. These women are basically paying to hang out with non-herbivore men for a while. But what about sex? Prostitution of the penis into vagina sort is illegal in Japan, and while there is a black market, the Japanese have also developed some creative legal alternatives. One that is quite popular and came up several times in our focus groups was soapland, where a guy lies on a waterproof mattress and a woman covers them both in soapy water and slides all over him. You can pay extra for additional services like oral sex or a handjob. Soapland, which is just a ridiculous word, does not carry a huge stigma. On a side note, I would give pretty much anything to have been in the room where the guy said, "I've got it! We'll call it Soapland." Some men told us if they went out in groups of friends, it wouldn't be absurd for one dude to be like, "Okay, I'll catch you guys later. I'm gonna hit Soapland real quick." Again, it seems that beyond the sexual pleasure, Soapland is providing a safe outlet for rejection-free romantic exploits. Why go to a nightclub and try to find casual sex and risk rejection when you can go to Soapland and be 100% sure a woman will place you on a waterproof mattress, cover you in lubricant, and then slide up and down your oiled-up body. And of course, there are straight-up illegal prostitutes. When we pushed this topic, we were surprised at how prostitution seemed much more common and accepted than in the United States. One participant in a focus group was a teaching assistant at a local university, and he told us that his college students often talked to him about their trips to visit prostitutes. It didn't seem to be a big deal to him. The students might as well have said they went to get ice cream after class. Now, admittedly, there are no perfect data on how often men go to prostitutes in different countries, but the best statistics we could find showed that roughly 37% of Japanese men have paid for sex at least once, compared with 16% of French men, 14% of American men, and 7-9% of British men. For those men in Tokyo who aren't into Soapland and brothels, there are sex shops everywhere, and they cater to every fetish imaginable, from French maids to girls in school uniforms to anime characters. There's also a booming market in sex toys, which is sold with no stigma attached. One of the most popular recent inventions is the Tenga. What's a Tenga? If you go on the company's website, you'll see what might be the greatest slogan of any corporation ever. The future of masturbation is now. The company specializes in masturbation devices like the egg, a single-use silicone egg that men fill with lubricant and masturbate inside. When you're done, you seal it up and throw it away. Fun fact, one of the directors of the Tenga Corporation, Masanobu Sato, holds the world record for the longest time spent masturbating, 9 hours and 58 minutes. That means he could have watched all 3 Lord of the Rings films in a row while masturbating, and as the credits of The Return of the King finished rolling, he'd still have 41 minutes of masturbating to do. This also made me realize, the only thing sadder than holding the record for longest masturbation is realizing you lost it to someone else. Sorry, man. He just jerked off for a few minutes longer. Better luck next year. None of the news articles that describe the lack of interest in sex in Japan really delved into this whole world of strange sexual alternatives, and when you learn about it, it does kind of explain the alleged lack of interest in sex. The herbivore sector is interested in sexual pleasure, but just not interested in achieving it through traditional routes. In their eyes, it seems, if you're so mortified at the thought of rejection by a woman, why not just jerk off in an egg and call it a day? At this point, you are probably wondering, what was my top meal in Tokyo? Well, it's tough to say. I really enjoyed Sushi Shomasa, a high-end sushi restaurant. However, I also really enjoyed the tasty tempura I had from the working-class vendors in Tsukiji Market. And of course, there was the ramen. To be honest, the food scene in Tokyo was way easier to understand than the single scene. It's hard to figure out why sex and relationships have changed so dramatically, so quickly, and why so many people have turned inward, staying home alone, playing video games, or hanging out in cat cafes, rather than reaching out for one another. On my last night in Tokyo, I decided to keep an open mind and buy a Tenga. Every stage of it was a bummer. I went into a convenience store and had to say, "Do you guys have Tengas?" The lady gave me a sad look and pointed me in the right direction. As I paid, I smiled and said, "Research for a book project." It didn't seem to convince her that I was cool. Instead, she's probably convinced I'm doing some very bizarre book called Masturbating Across the Globe, One Man's Journey to Find Himself. When I got back to my hotel room, I opened the thing up and gave it a go. I was kind of excited to see if it really was masturbation taken to the next level. Masturbation at the current level feels pretty good, so maybe this wouldn't be bad. Again, no. The experience of using an egg-shaped masturbation device was both odd and uncomfortable. The thing you put your thing into was cold and weird. It felt like I was masturbating with a thick, cold condom on, and I didn't understand the appeal. But in a symbolic sense, the Tenga seemed to be an alternative to casual dating and sex. It was a way to avoid putting yourself out there and having an actual experience with another person, which could go poorly or great. Say what you will about casual sex and the substance and quality of that experience, but the casual encounters I had in my own periods of singledom helped me grow as a person and brought me to a place to be ready to have a serious relationship. It also made me realize the true value of that sort of connection and better understand the advantages and disadvantages of a serious relationship. Dating has its downsides, but it can be a lot of fun. Even when it isn't, when you're meeting other people, there are always experiences that you remember and learn from. No matter what happens, you get a lot more out of it than you do from blowing your load into a cold silicone egg. Buenos Aires, the land of chongos and hysterical. After our trip to Japan, I got interested in seeing what happens in a dating culture where men are more omnivorous. Eric and I searched around for the world's particularly aggressive dating scenes and decided a good place to go was Argentina. If Tokyo is the capital of the herbivore man, then Buenos Aires must surely be the capital of the ribeye-eating maniac. Whether or not they deserve it, Argentine men have a global reputation for their hot-blooded romantic passion, which often bleeds over into something pathological and scary. In 2014, a survey conducted by a nonprofit organization called Stop Street Harassment revealed that more than 60% of women in Buenos Aires had experienced intimidation from men who catcalled them. To a lot of men in Buenos Aires, women's concern came as a surprise. When asked about the survey, Buenos Aires Mayor Mauricio Macri dismissed it as inaccurate and proceeded to explain why women couldn't possibly have a problem with being shouted at by strangers. All women like to be told compliments, he said. Those who say they're offended are lying. Even though you'll say something rude like, what a cute ass you have, it's all good. There's nothing more beautiful than the beauty of women, right? It's almost the reason that men breathe. To be clear, this is the mayor. Upon reading this quote, I investigated, and I can confirm that at the time of this interview, he was not wearing one of those helmets that holds beers and has straws that go into your mouth. As you can imagine, these statements didn't go over well. Hundreds of women, including the mayor's own daughter, condemned Macri's remarks, forcing him to publicly apologize. Among men in Buenos Aires, however, Macri's opinion probably isn't uncommon. In Argentina, where Eric and Shelley, a sociology grad student, spent a month doing interviews and leading focus groups, hitting on women with abandon is deeply ingrained in the city's cultural traditions. Men are expected to be pursuers in what Argentines casually refer to as the hunt, and the primary arena for such pursuits is the street. In Buenos Aires, the streets are filled with sexual energy. There is sensual tango dancing, chamuyo, flirtatious chit-chat, and various sexual quips are heard left and right, and people make out publicly in parks, restaurants, and on buses. In Japan, a woman would be surprised to be directly approached. But in Buenos Aires, the women we interviewed said that being the object of unsolicited male attention was a daily occurrence, and many men were reluctant to take no for an answer. Guys here, they don't care if you turn them down or deny them, one woman told us. They just keep talking to you. Talking is the least of it. Many of the women we interviewed told us that Argentine men can be uninhibited in their pursuit of sex. In one memorable focus group, a woman named Tamara reported that men she'd just met had kissed her, touched her leg, and tried to slip their hand up her skirt, despite her clear lack of interest in them, and that when she told them to stop, they responded as if frustrated and asked why. As she told the story, every other woman in the group nodded to show their familiarity with the situation. That's normal, one explained. When I go out and I get approached by a guy, no matter if I say I'm in a relationship and if I'm not interested, they still keep on going, said another. They'll say, is your boyfriend here right now? Do you live with your boyfriend? It's like totally acceptable. As much as you say no, 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 they get closer and closer into your face. Rob, a 28-year-old expat from New York, tried to explain this behavior to us during a focus group. He said the attitudes in Argentina were much different from the no-means-no culture of the United States. Here, if women say no, they're interested. If they're really not interested, they just don't say anything to you. They just completely ignore you. So now, Rob only keeps clear if women literally turn their back to him. On his reading of courtship in Buenos Aires, no is usually just a prelude to yes. You can see how much trouble this could generate. In our focus groups, both men and women said it was common for a propositioned woman to play hard to get, and then, only after the man had made a sufficient number of attempts, finally agreed to a date. Many women attributed this farce to a need to keep up appearances. If they responded too quickly, they might appear cheap. I have a friend who told me last week that she said no a few times to a guy she actually liked before saying yes just to play hard to get, one woman explained. It was just to make sure that he wanted something serious and not to be taken for an easy girl. Sexually, too, women described a fear of appearing too eager. We women know that if we have sex on the first date, then it's over, said another. Argentine women have plenty of ways of signaling their interest to suitors, but as in the United States, men tend to initiate contact. Sometimes women approach men, but most of those women we spoke with said they thought men found aggressive women a turnoff. I think they love the chase, said Sarah. Whenever you're forward, it's like, whoa, why is she after me? The use of technology in Buenos Aires mirrors the street culture. There's a level of aggression that Americans just don't hit. Emilio, a 28-year-old from the United States, told us that he'd taken to friending hot friends of friends on Facebook just to ask them out. Eduardo, 31, said he messaged about 30 women a week in hope of making something click. He'd hit them up on Facebook, Instagram, anywhere he could find them. Despite all this, very few young people we spoke with actually used online dating sites like OkCupid, in part because online dating still carried a stigma of desperation. But more important, it simply wasn't necessary. As Eduardo put it, if you're an Argentine woman, you don't need online dating to hook up with other people, because men will be after you all your life. Texting, however, was huge. When we asked the single people in our focus groups in Buenos Aires how many partners they were currently texting, few had less than 3. It wasn't uncommon for people to be in multiple relationships of various levels of seriousness. One expat from the United States, a 27-year-old named AJ, compared the dating scene in Buenos Aires to an asado, a barbecue. "You got all these different cuts of meat cooking at once," he said. "You got your sausage, which cooks fast. You got your big steak, which is your best cut, which takes some time, right? You gotta talk to all these girls at once, just like you take care of all the meat at once." After he made this analogy, I presented AJ with a trophy that said, "Most sexist food analogy of all time, meat and barbecue division." When it comes down to the business of actually getting into a relationship, Argentines have a reputation for being hysterico. The idea of hysterico, hysterica for women, came up frequently in our discussions. It's one of those culturally specific words that's kind of hard to define to someone who isn't from the culture, but I understood it to mean that someone acts one way toward you initially and then completely reverses course. A woman who says no, 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 and then finally yes is said to be hysterica, as is a man who flirts madly, then suddenly disappears for weeks without contacting you again. "When they are trying to pick you up, they really act like men," said Sarah. "They will talk to you until you hook up with them. And then they will act like girls. If you're not interested in them, they will become obsessed with you. If you are interested in them, they will disappear. It's like math. It's an equation." One common approach we heard about involved a man pursuing a woman by repeatedly professing his love for her and proving it in a distinctively Argentine manner, inviting her to meet his parents for a Sunday barbecue. He'll say, "I love you. You're the love of my life. I want to marry you. I want to have kids," said a 27-year-old Argentine woman named Sofia. "But then he never calls. In Spain, they tell you, 'I love you,' because they really mean it. It's not just a word. Here, they don't mean it." Another woman told us about a popular Argentine phrase that means, "Lie to me because I like it." It's all part of the chase. Even people in notionally committed relationships said they like to keep a past lover or potential partner waiting in the wings, ready to swoop in if their current relationship fell through. Several people we spoke with had a backup plan in case their current relationship didn't work out. Isabel, 28, reported flirting with several men over texts, even when she was in a relationship. She called it hacerte la linda, which translates roughly as to make yourself pretty, and refers to a kind of flirting. "Just because you're on a diet, it doesn't mean you cannot check out the menu," she said. "I mean, just as long as you don't pick up that particular plate." What's up with these people and the food analogies? Even when I had a boyfriend, if I went to a bar or something and I met a guy, I would give him my phone number just in case, said Marilyn, 25. Like, I wouldn't cheat, you know. "But you keep your options open," interjected another woman. "Yeah," said Marilyn, "'cause you never know, right?" Casual sex was predictably everywhere. In Argentina, women in relationships often have a chongo, which literally means strong man or muscle man. But it is also a catch-all term for a casual sexual partner, one that can refer to a friend with benefits, a regular hookup, or someone who you're seeing on the side while in a serious relationship. Used in a sentence, "Nah, we're not serious. He's my chongo." One married woman at a focus group told us that during her previous relationship, she'd had a chongo, whom she saw regularly for several years. "It was just skin," she explained, to make sure we understood that she wasn't cheating on her relationship, only meeting a sexual need. "I didn't even know his parents' names." I hope I'm never in a casual relationship with someone in Argentina and catch feelings. Imagine how much it would suck to hear, "What? Relationship? Are you serious? This is just for skin. Come on. I thought I was very clear. You're my chongo. Nothing more." Amazingly, the widespread interest in casual sex has shaped the buildings and the neighborhoods of Buenos Aires, as well as the culture. The city is teeming with telos, love hotels with no detectable stigma, where rooms are available by the hour. Telos, which exist at all price ranges and are available in the roughest as well as the most high-end neighborhoods, are designed for maximum privacy. The people we interviewed described a variety of techniques that ensure user discretion. In one Telo, guests drive into the parking lot, ask for a room, and then park in a numbered spot so their cars are adjacent to their room. In another, there's a small chamber between the front door and the room where hotel staff can deliver room service items without seeing the patrons. That said, at some hotels, maintaining privacy during peak hours is impossible. In Buenos Aires, most young single people live with their parents in relatively small apartments, as do children, of course. What this means is that nearly everyone who wants to have sex winds up using a telo on occasion, and late nights can be especially busy. Eduardo, the 31-year-old who messages 30 women per week, told us that occasionally he's had to sit in a waiting room when he arrives at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, along with everyone else who's come in from bars and clubs. One expat who lived next door to a telo said that she'd noticed a lot of traffic during lunch hours when, her host mother speculated, bosses like to screw their secretaries. If on the one hand the whole telo and casual sex scene sounds fun and liberated, on the other hand, for at least half the population, Buenos Aires can be pretty tough. In our focus groups, people reported that they'd often see young women crying hysterically in public places, like park benches and bus stops. When Eric asked why it was so common, the response was always the same. Men. The dating culture in Buenos Aires is extremely exciting and sensual, full of flirtation, pursuit, and casual sex. There is also an undeniably darker side, though, with unwanted aggression, manipulation, and infidelity. Everyone suffers the pain of love in Buenos Aires, but I couldn't help but conclude that things were a lot rougher for women than they were for changos. Chapter 6. Old Issues, New Forms. Sexting, Cheating, Snooping, and Breaking Up. The advent of smartphones and the internet means that our romantic lives now inhabit two worlds, the real world and our phone world. In the phone world, we have an unprecedented, highly private forum for communication that forces us to deal with age-old issues like jealousy, infidelity, and sexual intimacy in new formats that we're still trying to figure out. Sexting. Of all the changes in modern romance brought on by the phone world, the most radical has come in the form of sexting, the sharing of explicit sexual images through digital media. Conceptually, sexting is a timeless phenomenon. Nude photos, erotic letters, and the like have been documented throughout civilization. While something like the Anthony Weiner scandal seems unique to our time, there are precursors, such as the salacious love letters written by U.S. President Warren G. Harding to his neighbor's wife, in which he nicknamed his penis Jerry and her vagina Mrs. Powderson. I wish I had been there when the historian analyzing the letters had the eureka moment. Hey, wait a second. Whenever he says Mrs. Powderson, I think he means his neighbor's wife's vagina? Most strange to me is that whereas Mrs. Powderson is a horrible nickname for a vagina, Warren G. Harding is actually a great nickname for a penis. When it comes to photographs and video, our ability to capture ourselves has evolved with the technologies. Consumer film cameras were great for capturing high-quality images, but they had their disadvantages. Unless you had your own darkroom, you had to drop off the film to get developed, so your privacy would be compromised. Between the 1970s and the mid-1990s, Polaroids and low-cost video cameras allowed people to produce sexual content on their own and keep it private. But sometimes a kid would open up a box labeled, "Don't open!" and get scarred for life. Digital media, the internet, and most important, the rise of smartphones changed all that. Today, almost everybody has a remarkably high-quality camera and video recorder within arm's reach at every waking moment. In addition to having a high-tech way to capture the imagery, you also have a seemingly private place to store the images for yourself and your partner. But like the box that says don't open, sometimes it falls into the wrong hands. The key difference, though, is the ease of use and distribution. In the past, we can safely assume, most men weren't mailing Polaroids of their penises to girls they met at bars. It would have been creepy, and also a bit of a hassle. However, when a high-res camera is literally a few inches from your penis at all times, and you can instantly share the glorious photo, it's a game-changer. We don't have any numbers on the rates at which sexual images were shared prior to the smartphone era, but the numbers now are staggering. Sexting, especially among young people, isn't quite yet the norm, but it's quickly getting there. Here are some of the best stats on sexting that we could find. half of 18 to 24-year-olds have received sexts. One-third of older teens have sent a sext. Sexting is increasing among all age groups except 55 and older. You're more likely to sext if you own a smartphone. People who own iPhones are twice as likely to sext as people who use Androids. The most popular time to sext is Tuesday, between 10 a.m. and noon. Yes, we looked this up twice. Strange. People who are married or in committed relationships are just as likely to have sent sexts as their unattached peers. Why do people sext? The main reasons we discovered are to share intimacy with a partner, to build sexual attraction, to appease a partner, and in some cases, to maintain intimacy over long distances. The technology journalist Jenna Wortham did a piece on sexting, where the subjects each forwarded Wortham a sext they'd sent, and then let her interview them about it. "What I discovered," Wortham wrote, "is that sexting, like anything else done on our phones, was mostly just meant to be fun, for fun grown folks doing what grown folks do." People she interviewed had all kinds of reasons for sexting, and their comments, seen together, actually make it seem like a healthy and compelling way to sustain a modern erotic relationship. One 27-year-old editor sexted her hookup because it gave her a feeling of power. "It's kind of a control thing," she explained. "I wanted to make it want me." Dee, a 30-year-old artist, said she sexted with her fiancé to spice things up. "We have already seen each other's bodies a lot, and we will be seeing them a whole lot more," she said, "so sometimes eroticism can come from what is unseen or presenting something in a different way." M, a brand marketer, sent her boyfriend a picture of her breasts to help him cope with a case of nerves before a presentation at work. "This is my favorite. I just love the idea of the guy opening up his phone, seeing his girlfriend's boobs, and thinking, 'Ah, okay, you got this, Phil. Let's nail this PowerPoint presentation.'" On our subreddit, one woman gave a whole slew of reasons for why she'd sent sexts in the past. "Because it feels good to know someone wants you from far away. Because it's something to think about. Because it boosts confidence. Because I'd never done it before. Because I'd like them. Because I just broken up with someone." For some, the privacy and distance provided by the phone world allowed them to be more honest about their sexuality. "I started because I'm a very sexual person, and sexting was an easier way for me to discuss intimate things with my partners," said one female user on our subreddit. "I found it hard to ask for what I wanted or needed in the bedroom in person, so this way was easier for me to discuss my needs and fantasies. Now it's become something I enjoy, like a form of foreplay. I like to send something sexy to my mate before we're gonna see each other." Another woman wrote, "A guy I hooked up with a few years ago used to ask me for pics all the time. Finally, because I felt like I might lose him, it was not a healthy hookup relationship, I got into it. I loved it. I just felt super sexy taking them, and I still feel good looking at them now. Plus, one day, my boobs will be down around my waist, and it will be nice to remember." Many of our subreddit users said sexting provided a forum to maintain intimacy over long distances. One woman wrote, "I'm a girl who lives in the U.S., and my boyfriend lives in Wales. I would say we sex at least once a week. When it's a long-distance relationship like that, and we have to go 2 to 3 months without seeing one another, I think it's almost a necessity. I want to keep him interested and excited. And since we only had been together a short time before he went to Wales, we hadn't really discussed our likes, dislikes in the bedroom. But through sexting, we were able to express that and get it all out in the open. So the next time we see each other, we will already know the other's desires. If he asked me a year ago, I would have felt dirty if I was sexting. But now, I'm totally for it in a relationship." Another user explained, "I think it would be much harder to maintain an exclusive long-distance relationship without the technology in general. Just being able to communicate on GChat or via text during the day and actually see each other's faces while we talk every night is a pretty necessary part to maintaining our intimacy in our relationship. The sexting is just a nice way to spice things up without actually being present." The conclusion was clear. Without sexting, these relationships would be much harder to maintain and might not even last. Sexting provided an effective way of coping with the well-established and often heartbreaking dilemma: how to love someone when they are very far away. The same technology that affords us the luxury and privacy to share these intimate moments is also sadly what allows us to betray our partner's trust on a massive scale. The main reason people give for why they don't sext is that they're afraid of being exposed. One woman reported, "I've never sexted, and I don't think I ever will. The thought of it seems hot and exciting, but the possible consequences are terrifying. If the relationship goes south and he's still in possession of the pictures, then who knows where they'd end up? It just looks like an avoidable, unnecessary situation." We did hear some nightmare stories that would confirm this view of sexting. One woman who was initially reluctant to sext tells us what happened when she gave in. My boyfriend wanted to. I was uncomfortable with the idea, but he begged and dropped the "if you love me, you will" line. Said some stuff back and forth. I wasn't really sure what to say. He asked for a picture of me fingering myself. I obliged, then started getting texts from random numbers calling me things like nasty slut. Turns out he was at a party, passing his phone around and showing people what I sent. Utterly humiliating. That was years ago, and I haven't sent another sext since. Sending a photo to someone who could turn around and be pure human garbage, like the gentleman just described, is a widespread fear. And although in theory everyone could be exposed this way, in reality the risks affect women in a very different way than men. In 2014, private nude photos of various female celebrities leaked onto the internet after hackers posted them on the 4chan website. There was, like, one dude around in some photos, but the shots of him were not really the headline-grabbing images that spread around everywhere. Those were overwhelmingly images of women. The images were clearly meant for these women's partners, and were never meant to be shared. While the hackers who stole the photos were condemned, the women who had their photos stolen were scolded, too, for being reckless. "Don't want your nude photos leaked? Don't take any," went a typical response. Taking naked photos of yourself with your iPhone, the argument went, was indulgent, vain, and immature. The implication was that regular, sexually healthy people do not sext, despite the abundance of evidence to the contrary. Of course, not everyone agreed with this narrative, but it was still a popular argument. The fear of this kind of condemnation was another reason people gave for not sexting. But many of the younger women we heard from believe that the prevalence of sexting is already changing the perceptions of these risks. One 24-year-old told us that she sees something empowering in her sexting, and has decided that if her nudes were leaked, she wouldn't be judged for it. The warnings about sexting, mainly directed toward women, center around the worst-case scenario, your nudes being posted publicly, like on a revenge porn site. This is presented as something that will follow you for the rest of your life and haunt your career and future relationships. I don't think that will happen to me, but if it does, I like to think the viewers will draw the obvious conclusion that I am a sexually confident woman who made a video for someone she cared about. If someone I knew saw the images and judged me negatively for making them, I feel confident that the problem is with them, not with me. So when I sext my boyfriend, the main goal is to get us off. But it's also my little way of reassuring myself that I decide what to do with my body, and I get to decide which risky behaviors are worth taking. This view is becoming quite common among young people, particularly teens. For the generation that grew up in a smartphone culture, sexting has become a common step in the journey toward becoming sexually active. Along with the first kiss, now, at some point, there is often a first sext. When the journalist Hannah Rosen examined a high school in Central Virginia, where rampant sexting and promiscuous image sharing sparked a police investigation, a surprising number of the kids she met expressed confidence that the situation was no big deal. When an officer questioned some girls about their concerns about the photos being disseminated online, he was shocked when one insisted, "This is my life and my body, and I could do whatever I want with it," while another said, "I don't see any problem with it. I'm proud of my body." Some girls, he discovered, had taken naked photos of themselves specifically for sharing on Instagram. The idea that this should be treated with shame or that it would come back to haunt them seemed absurd. Regardless of how you or any officer sees the risks and rewards of sexting, it's becoming more and more of a common practice. And as we've seen with other aspects of modern romance, what seems insane to one generation often ends up being the norm of the next. Cheating. Of course, sending naked photos is not the only sexually charged behavior that smartphones enable or make easier. Consider infidelity. In the past, men and women who were cheating could flirt only in person or over a landline. People would have codes. "I'll let the phone ring twice, then hang up. That'll be your signal to go to the window, and there you'll see a zip line. Take the zip line down to the treehouse, and I'll meet you there at 10:30 p.m. Now you can be in bed with your spouse and ask, "Hey honey, what are you looking at on your phone?" She could reply, "Oh, just reading this op-ed in the Times," when she's actually sending your neighbor a photo of her Mrs. Patterson. Have all the increased romantic options and the technology to access them led to more people straying? I remember reading the Anthony Weiner Facebook messages, seeing the way he was just messaging random women all over the country, and watching the messages quickly escalate from innocuous to very sexual was unbelievable. This is a transcript of a chat session he had with one of these women, a lady named Lisa from Las Vegas. Wiener and Lisa, sorry to bring this back, guys, but it is fascinating. August 13th, 2010. I am trying to find the wonderful Anthony Wiener who I fell in love with for yelling at those damn repubs the other day, and you are funny as hell on The Daily Show. Your friend requests are full. You must friend me. You are awesome. Thank you, Lisa. Glad you have my back. You keeping an eye on that wackadoodle Sharon Angle for us? How insane is she? Who needs Social Security, Medicare, or education? If this wacko wins my state, I swear I will have to move. She may be dumber than plain, and that is tough to find. Like this cute new pic of you. When are you coming to Vegas to help me beat up the right-wing crazies? This is my pull-my-finger shot. Glad you like. I am ready for a Vegas trip. Truth-telling during the day? Got a night plan for us? Ha ha, that was a very loaded question. I've got all kinds of night plans for us. When are you coming? Dunno. Make me an offer I can't refuse. To get us in the mood, first we watch back-to-back episodes of The Daily Show and Colbert Report. Then, to really spice things up, we go deface all of my neighbor's Sharon Angle yard signs. Then, when we're really hot, we go to the bookstore and cover all the Glenn Beck books with copies of Audacity of Hope. I do this about once a week. You can tell I'm a very exciting girl. Or, if this is not your thing, we can just get drunk and have mad, passionate sex. For me, the most offensive part was that he used the word wackadoodle. Also, did you catch that sly, almost subliminal, blink and you might miss it allusion to sex? It was when she said they could have mad, passionate sex. That last message basically signaled a shift in their Facebook chat and opened the floodgates for all sorts of sexual messages and infamous penis photos. What fascinates me most, though, is that this is something that simply could not have happened 30 years ago. Sure, he might have still wanted to sexually stray from his relationship, but the privacy of Facebook, the ease of access to potential people to cheat with, and the ability to flirt with caution via the medium of chat, that perfect storm for temptation is undeniably a new development. Given the sensitivity of the subject and the potential judgment that would occur in an in-person focus group, we use the privacy of the internet to gain insight into people's real-world experiences with cheating and social media. I posed these questions in our subreddit. Has anyone started an affair or cheated on someone through social media? If social media didn't exist, would something like this have happened anyway? One gentleman said that he started a relationship through a social media site. It initially began as harmless chatting, but, like the Wiener chat, over time, it escalated. Though not as aggressive as the Wiener chat, it started getting flirty, and the two began sharing their innermost feelings and problems. It certainly wouldn't have happened without social media, as my wife had successfully cut me off from most of the non-family women in my life. I don't necessarily see it as a completely bad thing, either. Without my talking to the other woman, and the sort of honesty that relative internet anonymity provides, I wouldn't have realized just how fucked up my relationship was with my then-wife, and the numerous things that I always thought were normal, and were really her doing her best to control every aspect of my life, and generally make me unable to leave her. Another user said that he started an affair that he simply wouldn't have had the gumption to start without Facebook. They worked together and were casual acquaintances. One day, he looked her up on Facebook and sent her a message asking, "Would you like to get a drink sometime?" Soon after that, the affair began. If Facebook didn't exist, I doubt I would have gathered the courage to ask her directly. It made the initial step that much easier, he said. The advantages of technology that facilitate regular dating, such as the ease of access and the absence of the pressure found in an in-person interaction, also transfer over to cheating. This includes the ease of escalation, which, when engaging in something as scandalous as cheating, is quite valuable. With messages, you can slowly test the waters of potentially starting an affair. Once you find out the other person is on the same page, it can ramp up very fast, or you can easily backpedal without quite the same level of embarrassment you'd experience if it had happened in person. Here's an example. Guy: what you up to? Girl: nothing, just watching a movie in bed. Guy: cool. You know, it's really bad for a bed to have only one person in it. Throws off the balance in the long run. I could come over and help. Dot, dot, dot. Long pause. Dude panics. JK, I know nothing about beds. Good night! The other person may think you were a creep, but either of you can just act like it was a misreading of the message. In the wiener situation, phrases like, got a night plan for us, and make me an offer I can't refuse, allowed him to safely test the waters and see if Lisa was really interested in something sexual. Also, the privacy of our phones means we have a new place to foster and grow clandestine relationships. In the past, people who wanted to engage or flirt with someone outside their relationship would have to sneak away to a remote bar or restaurant to reduce the risk of being spotted by friends or loved ones. Today, with proper precautions, our phones provide a private refuge that can house intimacy that no one else is privy to. In one focus group, a gentleman told us he once started innocently texting with a married coworker, and it eventually turned into a full-on clandestine relationship. Normally, they had no reason to chat beyond the office. One day, the guy sent a jokey text when he saw something that reminded him of something he and the woman had laughed about at work. She responded, and a fun, witty banter took hold. These instances increased in frequency, and soon the two were also spending time together after work. Eventually, both parties caught feelings, and it developed into a secret relationship, with the married woman constantly sending texts to this other guy in secret. The texts were getting so frequent that the guy had to change the woman's contact info in his phone, so as not to arouse the suspicion of others, who might wonder why this married lady was texting him so much. Instead of getting texts from Susan, it looked like he was getting texts from a male friend named David. If I was ever texting frequently with someone and wanted to make an alias, I think I'd go with Scottie Pippen. Then, any friends who were peeking at my screen could be left wondering why I was texting with the former Chicago Bulls star on the reg. I only hope Scottie Pippen's wife never has an affair where she uses the same strategy and the guy texts while Scottie is in the room and he can see her screen. Scottie Pippen would likely believe it was an imposter Scottie Pippen from another dimension sent to steal his wife and kill him. The psychological damage inflicted on poor Scottie Pippen will be far worse than discovering a simple affair. Back to our real situation. Eventually, both parties decided it was best to end the affair. But again, would this kind of thing have taken off if these people hadn't had the privacy of text messages to introduce a romantic element into their relationship? She was married, and I respected that. I wouldn't have made a voice call to say little jokey things to her. It would have been weird. Since it was just texting, it seemed pretty innocuous. But as it went on, we both couldn't help but realize there was a spark between us. When you're both on your phones, you have this safe zone that no one else can break into. It was this private little world where we could talk about all the stress and confusion and love that the whole dilemma was creating. If it weren't for text messages, I'm not sure anything would have started between us. Some people we heard from, however, felt that ultimately, technology doesn't turn us into philanderers. If you're gonna cheat, you're gonna cheat, they said. Social media or no social media, in the end, it's two people together in the flesh. I don't think that someone who is otherwise a faithful partner in a relationship is going to suddenly start cheating because someone sends them a winky face in an IM, said one user on the subreddit in the thread's most popular post. I'd say it makes it easier to cheat, but doesn't make it harder to be faithful. But even if it doesn't lead to full-on cheating, social media presents new problems and temptations, even for the faithful. Besides offering privacy, social media also presents us with a forum where other potential partners are constantly on display. One gentleman recalled how, when he got into a new relationship, social media such as Instagram provided an outlet to view all the options out there. I love my girlfriend, but when we were first getting serious, I would go on Instagram and see all these hot girls. And it's like, whoa, should I be dating these girls or just settle down and be in a relationship? It felt like the opposite of out of sight, out of mind. They were in sight and in my mind. The privacy of the internet and phone world has also led to the rise of settings where people can be adulterous without any judgments. The most well-known example is Ashley Madison, a terrifyingly popular online dating website that is designed specifically to help people have affairs. The company's motto is, life is short, have an affair. The company enrolls its full-paying members in the Affair Guarantee Program, which offers a full refund if they don't find someone within their first 3 months on the site. The site's homepage offers users a click-through icon that lets them search and chat with married people in your area, as well as a blog and Twitter feed featuring advice such as how to get and keep a fuck buddy, and news items such as men not bothered by the idea of wives' infidelity. Apparently, it's growing quickly, from 8.5 million members in 2011 to a self-reported 11 million members in 2014. Now, I know that people have been cheating on each other for as long as they've made promises to be monogamous, and that, to date, there's no hard evidence that the internet is making people more likely to commit infidelity. That said, it's impossible to imagine something like Ashley Madison getting this popular this fast in a world without digital media. Whether or not we're cheating more often, it's certainly easier to do. breaking up in the phone world. Another thing that's become easier because of modern technology is breakups. Not long ago, breaking up with someone required an emotionally wrenching face-to-face conversation, or at the least, a phone call in which the person who wanted to end things had to own up to their feelings and usually explain themselves too. Generally, the breakup conversation also required being thoughtful about the other person's feelings and vulnerability and doing everything possible to say things that would boost the morale of the person being jilted. This is why our culture developed lines like, "It's not you, it's me," and "I'm just not ready to be in a relationship now," and "I'm sorry, I just want to focus on my dragon art." Of course, no one liked these conversations, but we all saw them as obligatory because they were the decent human thing to do for another person. Today, a growing number of people, and a majority of younger adults, are more likely to break up with someone by text, instant message, or social media than in person or by phone. According to a 2014 survey of 2,712 18 to 30-year-olds who'd had a relationship end during the previous year, 56% said they had broken up using digital media, with texting being the most popular method, 25%, followed closely by social media, 20%, and then email, 11%, which people used because it let them fully explain their reasons. By contrast, only 18% had broken up through a face-to-face interaction, and a mere 15% had split up with a call. A startling 0.0014% had broken up by hiring a blimp that said, "Tammy, I think we need to see other people." Note, I think this was just one dude named Phil from Indiana. The most common reason people gave for breaking up via text or social media was that it is less awkward, which makes sense given that young adults do just about all other communication through their phones too. Oddly, 73% of those young adults, the very same ones who said they had broken up with other people via text or social media, said they would be upset if someone broke up with them that way. To be clear, the study didn't specify how serious these relationships were, so it didn't account for how the length or intensity of the relationship affected the preferred breakup method. Obviously, there's a huge difference between breaking up with someone after 3 weeks and after 3 years. In fact, the anthropologist Alana Gershon has found many young people in casual relationships would actually prefer to be dumped by these less traditional methods. On the subreddit, we asked people how they felt about the new ways of breaking up. A lot of people who responded acknowledged that they'd broken up with their partners via text or social media to avoid stress and conflict. One woman explained, "I didn't have to look at his face or hear his voice, so I could be completely honest with him. He was a sweet guy, but I wanted to move on." What's interesting here, but also kind of scary, is that she's saying texting allowed her to be more honest because she didn't feel compelled to sugarcoat the reason she was ending things. Maybe texting means we'll stop giving those nonsensical, "it's not you, it's me" messages and become more direct instead. At the same time, most stories seem to paint a picture of someone who was using modern messaging to avoid confrontation rather than further honesty. This included many people who broke up in this fashion in relationships that were far beyond the casual point. Several users shared stories like this. "It was a normal day. I was supposed to meet the guy I had been seeing for 2 years for brunch. I drove to the place, and he wasn't there. I called him an excessive amount of times to no answer. I went home, I got on Facebook, and there he was, on Facebook chat. He says, 'Hey, I've been thinking about us, and I keep going back and forth on whether or not I want to be with you.' Frowny face. And that was it. I was overall surprised and couldn't believe that was the way he decided to end it, even though I had seen him the day before and was supposed to see him that day as well. I did make him call me to clarify the situation after this, which made it worse, of course. Haven't spoken to him since for obvious reasons." It was brutal to read. After 2 years, the relationship was ended with a frowny face, not even a full-fleshed-out emoji? There were many more stories like this, with passive-aggressive non-breakups that actually ended things way more obnoxiously and painfully than a face-to-face conversation. Ending things by changing their status on social media without telling their partner is another way people break up these days. One woman told us, "In college, my boyfriend broke up with me by changing his Facebook status to single. We got back together 6 years later, and then he broke up with me over text message. I should probably stop dating him. If you start dating him again, and he says he needs to stop by the blimp place, maybe brace yourself to read bad news in the sky." This one is astounding because of the depth of the relationship that preceded the breakup text. "Back in June of 2012, when I was 43, my boyfriend broke up with me via a text message after being together for 8 years. I practically raised his daughter and had been totally committed to him and everything that came with him. I was really offended and hurt as I felt that I at least deserved to be broken up with in person, or at least on the phone. Apparently the wound didn't run too deep, though, because look what happened next. After 10 months of no contact, his uncle passed away, and I called him and left a message with my condolences. We finally talked after that and eventually got back together. I still love him completely and have forgiven him for how things went down, and you best believe, I gave him hell for that text. No offense, but at this point, let's take a moment to be thankful we are neither of the people in that relationship. When I discussed this topic with people from my generation, they were shocked to learn that so many people were breaking up in this fashion. The younger generation has taken another idea that seemed bizarre and made it into a norm. Is it that surprising, though? If you subscribe to Sherry Turkle's argument that the prevalence of text-based communications is leading to a decline in face-to-face conversations and the skills to conduct them, the shift makes total sense. Exes live on in the phone world. For those getting out of relationships, especially for the jilted, social media also presents an easy outlet to reconnect with past loves. We heard many stories of former flames who reconnected over flirty GChat or Facebook messages and wound up cheating on their new partners. But even if it didn't lead to cheating, having to see their former love's presence on social media was tough for the jilted. It makes it harder to let go, one person told us. Even if you are one of those unicorns that can leave a relationship with friendly feelings and a clean break, your self-control is tested when all you have to do is click a button to see how they are living their lives without you. The temptation to continue to creep on your ex over the internet is nearly universal. One study found that 88% of those who continued to have access to their ex's Facebook page said they sometimes monitored their ex's activities, while 70% of people who had disconnected from an ex admitted to trying to spy on the ex's page by other means, such as through a friend's account. Many people we talked to advocated a complete unfriending on all accounts, but others thought those kinds of social media plays created drama in and of themselves. Even if you do unfriend or unfollow, though, it's hard to avoid your exes. As one person told us, it gets complicated the longer you had a relationship with them. Can you block them on Facebook? Sure. But you have the same friends, or at least befriended her friends on Facebook, you're going to see them doing the same stuff via pictures that your friends post. Some people have gotten pretty creative about how to solve the problem of the social media ex. One 19-year-old girl from Toronto named Cassandra photoshopped pictures of Beyoncé over her ex-boyfriend's face and put them on Tumblr. If imagining yourself at your happiest with Beyoncé doesn't help, I don't know what will, she told BuzzFeed. I personally have thought about the strategy and decided that other celebrities might be good as well. Ladies, trouble getting over your man? Why not Photoshop in the transporter himself, Jason Statham? Fellas, does it make you sad to have those vacation photos of you and your lady in Hawaii? What if instead you were in Hawaii with the funnest dude ever, Dwayne The Rock Johnson? Ladies, are you sad when you look back on that romantic dinner with your ex who left you for your best friend? What if that wasn't a romantic dinner, but a stimulating conversation with Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor? Even if neither you nor your partner is being tempted to use social media to facilitate cheating, since we all know how easy it is, there is another trend that is seeping into modern relationships. Snooping. Snooping. If social media makes it easier to cheat, there's no question that it makes it a lot easier to get caught. Every interaction with someone online creates part of a digital paper trail. This digital paper trail and the knowledge that our partners have the secret world in their phones can lead to what we will refer to as snooping. Both in our in-person focus groups and on the subreddit, many people discussed how secretly viewing their partner's texts, emails, and social media led to their finding incriminating evidence that made them angry and sometimes even ended the relationship. I broke up with a girl because of a text I had seen on her phone, someone recounted. We were in bed and she got up to go use the bathroom. After a few moments, I heard her phone vibrate on the bed. It was a text. On a lock screen was a text from her ex-boyfriend that said something along the lines of, "Are you coming over again tonight?" My ex and I both got into a bad pattern of checking each other's phones, and it led to a lot of trust breakdowns, said one gentleman on Reddit. Most of the time, there was nothing at all to hide. But before the last fight, I found out she had been lying to me about going to a Bible study, and instead going to spend time with the guy she met at that Bible study. And no, it wasn't her new best friend, Jesus Christ. So, there you have it, listeners. If your boyfriend or girlfriend says they are out at Bible study, they are more likely out boning someone from Bible study. Even in instances where someone snooped and didn't find evidence of cheating, The act of going through your partner's phone can create its own problems. In seeking to make sure that your partner is being faithful, you may inadvertently breach his or her trust. In our interviews, people on the other end of snooping had varying feelings about being snooped on. Some didn't care because they had nothing to hide anyway. Many subscribe to the theory that if you leave your accounts logged on, it's fair game. But others believe that looking at your partner's screen is a violation of trust or that it reveals underlying jealousy issues. Some even said it was grounds to end a relationship. One thing that stuck with me, though, was that whether or not your partner is actually cheating, these suspicions and the snooping that follows can boil into full-blown paranoia that drives you mad. Snooping. One gentleman in a large focus group held in New York described how he caught his girlfriend cheating when her Gmail account was left open. He saw an open exchange between her and an old boyfriend and felt compelled to check it based on his previous suspicions. This led to the crowd of roughly 150 people generally agreeing when I asked, "So if someone forgets to log out, your attitude is, if the shit's open, I'm reading it?" She was in fact cheating, but agreed to end it with the old boyfriend. They worked through their issue, but it led to a dangerous downward spiral where he kept checking her emails, G-chats, and texts. The girl would change passwords, but he would crack them. Sometimes he found something suspicious, like deleted chats, and other times he didn't. Eventually, he found an email that made it clear that the relationship with the old ex-boyfriend was not going to end as she had promised. They then broke up. What was interesting was that, even though the snooping ultimately helped him catch his cheating girlfriend, after that experience, he felt in future relationships, he would never snoop again. He felt that snooping only led to suspicion and paranoia that could break the fundamental trust needed to maintain a relationship. His sentiment made sense to me after I took in all the stories in our interviews. So many people we interviewed told us that the slightest glimpse into their partner's private phone or social media could spark an uncontrollable need to snoop and read more. One flash of an incoming text or email from a stranger of the opposite sex or NBA All-Star Scottie Pippen is all it takes to raise questions. People generally recognize that most of the time there's nothing to worry about. Even so, it's hard not to follow the trail once you find it. In most relationships, the barriers to our private digital world break down without our realizing it. As a relationship progresses, a couple winds up sharing passwords out of convenience. "Hey honey, what's the password on your laptop? I want to listen to that awesome Pitbull song on Spotify." "My password is Pitbull," she replies. "Wow, that's crazy." Next thing you know, you're listening to Pitbull's hit album, Planet Pit. Then a G-chat message comes up from a guy named armando.perez@gmail.com. You think to yourself, "Holy shit, Armando Perez? That's Pitbull's real name. Why is he messaging my girlfriend?" Is your girlfriend having an affair with Pitbull? Do you read the G-chat message to make sure she's not? Do you possibly violate your partner's trust just momentarily to put your fears at ease? It's a conundrum you didn't plan on facing, but now you have to. Snooping or accidentally getting a glimpse into your partner's private messages isn't the only way to descend into madness. Simply reading the messages posted publicly on a partner's social media is often enough. A woman in one of our focus groups described getting suspicious when another woman was being very active on her boyfriend's Facebook wall. "This girl was just constantly writing on his wall," she said. "It was like, ugh, you know he has a girlfriend." She became agitated and decided to check his text messages, upon which she confirmed he was cheating. Men and women also described partners getting upset when someone of the opposite sex was liking a lot of Instagram pictures or even seeing certain types of photos. One gentleman we interviewed described how his girlfriend would get very jealous if she saw Instagram posts of him with other girls or other female users liking or commenting on too many of his photos. "One time I made the mistake of liking a photo of this friend of mine in a bikini. All hell broke loose," he said. These are not necessarily new problems. Is a girlfriend getting upset that you liked an Instagram photo of a cute girl wearing a bikini any different from a girlfriend getting upset because you ogled a cute girl at the beach? All the mundane misunderstandings and fights that we've always gotten into in our relationships get reinvented in weird and interesting ways in the digital world. One gentleman told us a tale that involved him getting suspicious of cheating due to a glimpse of his girlfriend's social media at a very stressful moment. "My girlfriend was in a ski accident. I was in the ambulance with her, and she gave me her phone to call her parents. Afterwards, I looked down and I noticed that she downloaded Snapchat. I didn't really know what Snapchat was, and all that I had heard about it was that it was an app specifically for sending nude pics. So I checked, and there were like 8 Snapchats from this one guy whose name I didn't recognize. And I was furious, but I didn't say anything, because she was in a back brace, which seemed like bad timing. And months later, we threw a party and I met this dude, and he was gay, which was extremely reassuring. I experienced a version of this myself once when my girlfriend got upset with me due to Instagram activity. I was taking off for a flight to New Zealand for a cousin's wedding. Before boarding, I called her.